This is the Big Web Show, featuring special guests and topics like web publishing, art direction, content strategy, topography, web technology, and more. It's everything web that matters. The show is hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman. He's the inventor of the web and the internet. I'm Dan Benjamin, and this is episode number 55. We want to say a very quick thank you to our two sponsors, Audible.com and FieldNotesBrand.com. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. We also want to say thanks to MidasGreenTech.com, virtual private servers submerged in oil. You can find out more about them, MidasGreenTech.com.
I was submerged in oil once.
Were you really? This is Jeffrey Zeldman. How are you, sir?
I'm really good today. I'm really good. Thank you.
You sound really good.
Getting better all the time.
You sound so good to me right now.
Thank you. Yeah. It's the mic. And we have a very good sounding guest today.
We sure do.
Marissa Christina. You know, this is going to be a little bit of an unusual show in a way. When people in our industry talk about accessibility and disability, they always seem to really have one idea in mind, right? It's like, oh, how can blind people use the web? That's kind of the extent of the thinking for a lot of web developers who don't have a disability themselves at this time, right? They sort of go, oh, yeah, well, I used alt text, so I guess it's okay, and blind people can navigate, and it's okay. But there's a lot more to accessibility than that, and there's a lot more to disability than that. And today we have as our guest Marissa Christina, who was a deployment analyst for a major hospital in Southern California before being diagnosed with a debilitating vestibular disorder. And she is now a web designer and has a blog called AbleDis.com, which documents living with a hidden disability. Let's start there. I guess talk a little bit about how we met, how we bumped into each other on the internet, and what it means to have a hidden disability.
Wow, it's a big question. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate you guys giving me this platform. It means a lot. Actually, the reason I reached out to Jeffrey was because I started actually listened to the show, and I started hearing a lot about web designers that are meeting together, that are greeting with each other. They're going to conferences. They're doing working groups and meetups. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I can't be involved in any of those situations because of my disability. And so I started to think more and more, is a career in web design accessible? And I have to kind of correct you. Right now, I'm not currently a web designer. I'm trying to become a web designer.
Right.
And so I'm basically trying to teach myself, I guess self-taught in a way, because how to become a web designer.
I just want to say you're an alcoholic, if you say you're an alcoholic.
An alcoholic.
Right? AA. And you're a Christian, if you say you're a Christian, right? And it's true. And you're a web designer. It doesn't mean that you're at the top of your game and that you're the most famous web designer in the world or the most accomplished, but we are all teaching ourselves web design. So anyone who says they're a web designer, what they're really saying is, I know some things about web design and there's a whole lot I don't know.
Exactly.
And so in that sense, by what you've just acknowledged and the humility with which you acknowledged it, we take you into our brother and sisterhood immediately. Of course, you're a web designer if you're admitting that there's so much you don't know and you're trying to teach yourself. That's what we're all doing.
Thank you so much. It's actually pretty interesting having a vestibular condition, because a vestibular condition, the reason I even got to this place is because a vestibular condition affects your balance system. Okay, so once your balance system is compromised, you're dealing with things like dizziness, vertigo, disequilibrium. So having to deal with that 24 hours a day for the last 6 years, you can imagine living with that type of condition, it's difficult to work in a cubicle 8-to-5 environment. So I found myself being on disability, being restricted to working in these normal environments. So now I'm basically behind four walls here. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? So I actually thought, okay, examining the careers that I could have. I don't know, for some reason, web design kept creeping up. And then within web design, I started hearing the words like accessibility. And the more I researched it, I thought, hey, there's actually individuals that are developing their careers and that are focused on making sure that the web is accessible. And I thought, wow, I would love to be a part of that because of what I'm going through right now. So I just thought I have to be part of the web design community because they are inclusive, they are welcoming, and it is very rare. So even though I haven't found my place, and if I want to be a front end designer, if I'm even trying to a little bit confused on that. Front end design and design. I'm trying to figure out where my place is, but I really love the idea of being part of this community.
Well, thank you and welcome. Derek Featherstone, for example, is a friend of ours, a really big accessibility person. And it's funny, accessibility is kind of a scary topic to a lot of people. I think because disability is scary to a lot of people. We all have different health problems or things that are going to happen to us at different points in our life, but we're all afraid of it until it does happen. And I think there's some kind of superstition around that. Have you gotten a lot of support for your disorder, or are people kind of freaked out by it?
That's an interesting question. I think in the beginning, I was freaked out. People were freaked out. I mean, I went into my mid-20s. My career as a deployment analyst, it sort of just came out of the blue, like a Mack truck. And then next thing you know, once you have a condition like this, you're just going and bouncing from specialist to specialist to specialist, trying to get answers. And you can feel yourself depleting because you know you're dizzy and it's all over the place. So I think after my initial shock, then of course my family felt the wrath of that shock. And then from there, I thought, well, what am I going to do? Even my employer, she was sweet enough to keep me on for some time. But when she got transferred out of the department, it was kind of like, okay, HR stepped in and was like, all right, you have a certain amount of time to return to work in the capacity in which you did. And if you can't, we have to terminate you. So that time came by very quickly.
Is that legal?
I think it's legal if they, I'm not sure about the legality because obviously I'm not a lawyer, but that's what they did. I mean, so they gave me a amount of time. My particular job title, I wasn't going to be able to work from home because the job required me to be, you know, part of a deployment team. So I mean, my boss was buying me time. But once HR stepped in and then they gave me the timeline and I couldn't make the timeline, they didn't offer me any work from home opportunities. So I pretty much became terminated. So now can you imagine, okay, you have bills, you have rent, so many things and you have to support yourself. And now what are you going to do? You're not having an income. And for me, I was young. So savings was sort of out the door. You know, you're spending right. And having a good time. So I sort of just freaked out. And then that's how I came into, I got to find a career. I got to find a way to still function with something that's happening to me. So it's just for the last 6 years, I would say the last four, it's been pretty hazy in terms of everything that's happened. And now with the blog, and I feel like I'm starting to settle down and I'm starting to think, okay, I'm ready to embark on a career. And what will that career be? And how can I find a career working from home?
Well, a career working from home, there's definitely web work to be done from home. I used to joke, I started my agency just, you know, in my apartment with a pack of cigarettes and a computer. So, you know, you can definitely do it. Before we get into that, though, help people understand, what's it like when someone has a vestibular disorder? If I see someone staggering, would they be slumping? Would they have trouble focusing?
No, you know what? It's actually, I'm so glad. Jeffrey, I love you. Okay. It's important for you to ask that because that's part of being a hidden disability. If you were to see me in the mall, in a restaurant, you would have no clue necessarily that I have a vestibular disability. The best way I can put it to the audience is this. I want everyone, all the listeners, to imagine yourself as a piece of snow in a snow globe. Okay? Now I'm going to take that snow globe and I'm going to shake it up. So you're flying all over every which direction. And as you're about to settle, okay, you're a piece of snow. You're just about to settle. I'm going to shake that globe again.
Right.
Okay. And I'm going to keep doing that. And for me, that's been happening for the last 6 years. So jeez. I haven't had any break. It's chronic disequilibrium with moments of vertigo. The vertigo can range from being mild to violent.
Like
so
terror,
you can see
like
how that would be difficult to, your cognitive is affected. Your visual, you have to take in a lot of things visually affect me. Noise affects me. I actually hadn't gone to the movies for 5 years because can you imagine the sound?
You haven't missed anything. Let me tell you.
Yeah,
you haven't missed, I've been
great.
Going. You haven't missed anything.
So it's just been crazy. I mean,
Smurfs
it's been a
3D, come on.
Smurfs 3. Oh, 3D's out of the question. Don't even go there. That's just cruel. That's just cruel. That's so, yeah, that's kind of.
You missed nothing. You missed nothing with that.
That's the best thing. I mean, some people you may be able
sleep?
To see other effects.
That's
difficult. To sleep is difficult because the minute I close my eyes, if I was to stand up here and close my eyes, I'll just fall to the ground. So my eyesight
is very dizzy. I mean, I've been very dizzy and for various reasons. And I remember as a little kid, like spinning on a spinning tire. And
yes,
it's like that.
Sort of like that. But there are differences in that. You can also have, with a vestibular condition, you can have disequilibrium where you're kind of just floating all around in space. You're not really sure where you're at. You can have the dizziness like you were feeling, moments of complete room spin where you're vomiting, throwing up. Thank God I don't have that as violent. You can see that in cases like Meniere's. There's different forms of vestibular disorders. So,
what can they do for you?
For me and my particular condition, nothing at this current time. The etiology is a little bit unknown. They have some thoughts about what might have happened, but there is really no technical cure for me in my particular case.
Are there medications that can just help you keep food down, help you be a little calmer?
Yeah, that's good to know. I found a lot of things I've had to do holistically, like ginger pills and things of that nature, because there's really nothing on the market. They can give you something called meclizine, but for me, I'm well beyond that. That stuff doesn't really help my particular condition. So at this time, it's a lot of praying. It's a lot of ginger pills. It's a lot of me taking care of myself in terms of making sure I sleep decently, get enough rest, drink water. I have to change my eating habits, making sure the rest of my health has to be on target because I'm already dealing with enough from the vestibular disorder.
And how do you exercise?
That's difficult. I find myself that I actually walk, and I walk distances with two walking sticks. So that would be the only thing you could visually see. Like, I can walk in the mall. It's okay. I'm doing fine. But if I'm going to walk maybe say a mile or 2 miles, you don't want me really doing that by myself because I could fall. There's a chance of falling. My imbalance might creep in. So I use two walking sticks and that's how I walk around the neighborhood.
And there are support groups, I imagine?
Yes, there are support groups. I want to give a shout out because I know there's some people listening on the Dizziness Blues on Facebook right now. They've been great. There are other members in the community that are also going through chronic vestibular disorders. And so they've been a really great help.
Are there, when you use websites, are there things that web designers do, are there things that websites do that can cause a person with vestibular disorder to become, that are harmful to you or that are disturbing? Like obviously, for a blind person, if I didn't use alt text or I didn't use, if I didn't do my forms properly, they wouldn't actually be able to use the website. And if I don't use semantic markup, it's hard for a blind person using a screen reader to navigate the website. That's all very known stuff.
Yeah.
For someone with a vestibular disorder, is sound on a website a problem? Are there issues with color or size relationships of type or contrast, anything like that?
I think it'd be a little bit difficult for me to narrow down exactly, but I can just give you from my personal experience because there's so many different types of vestibular conditions. For me, like for example, right now I have to lower down the sound a little bit because the sound is, it's kind of taking away from my other focuses. So things like sound, I hate to be disrespectful, but a lot of flash websites kill me just because things are moving around constantly and that's a no-no. A lot of times, also, too, if I go to certain sites that have like a crazy background, maybe have you ever been into Baja Fresh? I don't know if that's over in New York, but it's like a Mexican restaurant. The squares are like checkered. It's like a checkered board.
Yeah.
And if I see any of that type of checkerboard or like Vegas carpet style backgrounds, it's no good. So I'll just leave the site.
Yeah, that's no good for me either.
Yeah, I was going to say that bugs me too. I can only imagine what it would be like.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my God. One way I'm thinking of this, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but I'm just trying to empathize. This is like, while being mentally coherent, it's almost like being drunk in a way, or having a really, really pounding headache or pounding hangover, and like looking at someone wearing a horrible green tie or something, and it's just...
Exactly. I do explain to someone says, oh, do you miss drinking or do you drink? Oh, I don't need to drink. I'm drunk every day. So, that's pretty much how it is. And it might seem fun, but once you can't get off that ride for 6 years and you want to go back to normalcy, it's really difficult.
You're very, very articulate and very coherent. Obviously, it doesn't affect your perception. It affects your perception, but it doesn't affect your intellect at all. I mean,
no, and that's one of the. I don't know how to explain this, but that in itself is very difficult because I feel like my mind and my spirit are completely intact, which is great. But then when you deal with some of the other limitations, you're like, wait, I can't participate in this or this or this. And that drives me nuts. So I'm kind of learning to find a balance. And so that's why I think it's so important for me to find ways to contribute for my mental health, you know, for me to stay mentally fit. I have to be able to get back to work. I have to be able to contribute. I don't want to live on a disability check. You know, I don't want to be just a disability.
When and you've found one way to do that, which is with your blog, abledis.com. How did you start that and what kind of response have you gotten?
Sure. I actually started abledis.com more of like... It was an interesting way because I actually have a team of doctors, and one of the doctors, he's a chiropractor, and he's been working with me for the last, I would say, 8 months. Well, 6 months into it, he had me writing a journal daily. And so as I was writing a journal daily, he started bringing to my attention, Marissa, I think you should write. And I thought, me? I mean, my grammar's terrible. My writing skills are terrible. So I'm like, ah. So I kind of put it out of my mind. And then he kept bringing it up as he was reading my journal. So finally I said, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'm like, I'll try to blog. You know, I'll just put it out there and see what comes out. I didn't know I had all this in me. So it just started pouring out. The response has been minimal. I think it's because it's just a blog, kind of like me just recapping my life and saying things of what I'm going through. But the responses that I do get, they're really pretty powerful, pretty meaningful. People are writing and saying, oh, I didn't know. I thought I was alone, or I can't believe you're going through this, or, you know, emails of encouragement. So that's kind of how abledis.com came about. It's just a reflection of myself and what I'm going through. And I'm just trying to document as much as I can on there.
Do you, are you able to use forum software and stuff like that to communicate with people?
Forum software meaning?
Are you able to use, you know, Facebook or
discussion forums,
that's why
Facebook has been great because that's how I found the Dizziness Blues community. We're a small community. I think there's like about 170 people there. And it's just been great to have those people because, like, for example, if you're having a bad day, you just log in and you say, hey, what's going on? You can support other people. So no, it's been great. And unfortunately, I don't want to scare anyone, but on a disability, you can't afford things like smartphones. You can't afford things right. like iPhone, iPad. So I'm embarrassed to say that I don't have any access to that type of stuff, but I do use Twitter via my laptop and I do check, you know, Facebook pretty frequently and keep up with those types of social networks.
So you're okay. So you mostly have a desktop experience when you use the web.
Exactly. That's the only experience that I have right now.
Okay. And you stay at home more than most people, would you say?
Oh, yes.
Well, maybe not more than me, but...
I
would beg to differ. I mean, it's difficult for me to see the sun sometimes. I do stay at home quite a bit. The doctors have been encouraging me to get out more and experience things because maybe there's a possibility that my brain will compensate. So you will catch me at the mall. It's brutal. You may catch me at a Costco, stuff like that. But pretty much I'm at home. I'm spending a lot of time at home.
We'd like to say thanks to Field Notes for sponsoring today's episode. This is an amazing set of USA memo books and more. I have two of these on my desk right now. I really do. I never have less than two. And there's a new edition. It's called the American Tradesman Edition. It's a limited release for summer. It's sturdy. It's reliable. It comes with a carpenter pencil. Get one and then go build something that'll last 100 years. These things are available individually and as part of a yearly subscription, which I highly recommend. In fact, I recommend it so much, they made a special coupon code just for me. It's Heard It From Dan. Use that coupon code and you will save $25 on a subscription. FieldNotesBrand.com is the place to go to get it. I'm not writing it down to remember it later. I'm writing it down to remember it now.
So what are your questions about becoming a web designer and maybe questions to our listeners? Do we we're not doing this live.
Yeah, we're live.
Are we?
Sure.
Do we have people in the...
Yeah, we've got some in there. A couple hundred. Yeah.
Do they have questions?
Yeah, we'll ask them. If they have questions, I have a question.
Sure.
What?
Do you think that, I mean, back to the device thing, and, you know, you're on the desktop experience. Do you think it would be easier, better for you if you had something like an iPad? Like if you were able to, or would that be worse? In other words, is getting into the position of sitting at a desk, is that trouble for you? Would it be easier if you're like, you know, reclining? I mean, and, well, because these are the kinds of things I think web designers, at least in my limited career as a web designer, I'm never thinking of this particular case. You know, you think, we've got to have, like Jeffrey said, we've got to have the alt text so that, you know, the people, okay, great. And we do that. And then we think that we've done it all. We have it. We have everything we need. But apparently that's not the case. I mean, what about for you? What would make it easier for you?
Well, for example, I didn't want to be video recorded because I thought the poor audience, they're going to have to see me move around so much. Because so far in this conversation, I've stood up, I've sat down, I've kind of paced a little bit. So, I mean, for me, that's a pretty interesting question. Maybe an iPad would help. I can't say because I don't have one and I don't have an experience with one, but maybe it would. But for me, I don't want to be too stagnant for too long. The reason is because can you imagine I'm always dizzy? Things are always moving around.
Right.
So for me to stand there, I have to feel that. So if I'm in motion, things feel a little bit more comfortable for me. So I, you know, that's why I think if I was at work in a cubicle environment, they'd be like, this poor girl, she can't sit very long.
Right.
I need to take breaks. And that's the way that I take breaks. I'll walk around, stand up, move around. So I'm not sure how to answer that question because I don't have those devices, but I think they may be beneficial. They may allow me to have more range, and be more connected in different ways than having to come to a desktop every time. Thank God I have actually, I want to shout out to the Department of Rehab because I've been working with them and they actually granted me a computer, a printer, software, and books. So they've been really helping me with that piece because obviously this stuff is not affordable on a disability budget. So they've been really helpful to me in that way. So they gave me a laptop. So I carry that laptop from room to room, place to place. And that's been a real blessing.
Do you think you take it? This may seem like a weird
thing.
Like, what about something like a treadmill? Does that good or bad for you?
Well, the treadmill is okay per se, but I have to have someone present because I don't want to fall or hurt myself.
Right.
And also too, can you know that feeling that you get after you come off the treadmill?
Yeah.
Feel that weird feeling? Okay, well imagine that magnified times 10. So once I get off the treadmill, I'm like, so my fiance, you know, he'll say, okay. It's okay. Just move over here and he'll kind of help me out and I'll just have to sit down for a little bit. But the doctors have encouraged me to try to get on a treadmill to walk, to get my core stronger so that I can have leg strength, more balance, stuff like that.
That was my silly idea was maybe if the movement was helpful, you could be, I can imagine you up on a treadmill with an iPad or something, but I guess not.
Treadmill with an iPad. I think that might be a little too much movement.
Yeah.
a little too much.
Because the iPad's a movement oriented, user interface,
right?
You drag and make things bigger and
maybe
smaller.
That might
actually be problematic.
It'd be tough until I actually got a chance to really experience it. It's tough to say. I mean, I know that there's other members of the community that use it, and they haven't mentioned any problems. They use smartphones or other things. It's just for me right now. The big thing is price. It's just out of my reach right now. I mean, if for me, 65% of my disability check goes to medical coverage that's not covered under Medicare. So expensive devices are not an option for me right now.
Are you living with your parents?
Oh, well, I actually live with my grandmother. Shout out to my grandmother. Okay. She took me in. She's been very kind and she's allowing me to stay there. So yeah, no, I wouldn't be able to afford to have an apartment right now or do any of those things. The disability budget is very small. And with
I'm an American, so I should know better than to ask, but why would stuff be uncovered? Why, when it's clearly medically needed, doctors are saying this person has a completely debilitating condition and here's medicine that this person needs. Why wouldn't that be covered?
Well, I think it would be covered if I needed certain vestibular direct help. But for me, say, for example, I'm looking for a better quality of life because there really right now is not a cure for me. I'm looking for quality of life. So if I want to go to, say, something like a dentist, and right now I've grinded down the left side of my teeth from being dizzy so much, the left side is grinded down. I know, it's pretty crazy, huh? So the left side of my teeth has been grinded down. So for me, it's important for me to see a dentist. And for me, I need to seek TMJ care. Well, if you have an orthotic made in your mouth here in California, my cost is about $4,000. Okay, so that's pretty crazy. That's not covered. That's not a covered, they don't believe that's necessary. Things like my eyesight, I have you know, problems with my eyesight now and issues with my eyesight. That's not covered by Medicare. So these are, you know, expensive costs that are out of pocket. I have to set up a lot of payment plans, like that $4,000. It has to be set up on a monthly payment plan because I cannot get $1,000 up front. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So how can web developers, web designers really think about how to address you or somebody like you who's having this kind of an issue? Is there any advice maybe that you might have for those who are saying we'd like to make it easier for you to use the web? We'd love to make it a great experience for you on our website. What do they do?
Wow, that's difficult. I want to thank everyone for what they've done up to this point. I mean, talk about a great community that even embraces accessibility to begin with. I'm sure for other disabilities are really able to participate. I can't speak specifically for vestibular, but I can talk about some of the limitations I'm seeing trying to get into web design. Like, my big question right now is a career in web design accessible. Right. That's my big question right now.
Right. They, just so you know, when the W3C, which is the standards body that comes up, you know, when they come up with accessibility standards, there's two levels to it. So for example, they talked about making a certain Adobe product accessible, making Flash accessible, right? When Adobe worked on making Flash accessible, they also worked on making the Flash application accessible so that not only could you make Flash content that a person with a disability could use, but a person with a disability could also use Flash to make that content. And the W3C with WCAG 2, which is the current accessibility standard from the W3C, very much about tools as well as, end user experience. So, you know, they think from an authoring perspective as well as from an end user perspective. So you're kind of covered there. I don't know how much research they've done in vestibular disorders. They may have done it and they may not. This is beyond my, I was hoping, you know, I want to learn more from you. I don't know. I don't know what they've done. But obviously flashing text, I mean, those kinds of things, which are discouraged for like people with epilepsy and so on.
Yes, exactly.
Those kinds of things would be bad for you as well.
Yes, exactly.
Things that move needlessly or jump around on the page to be cute, not good for you at all, make you sick.
Right.
Yep. So, yep, it's more of the big thing is a web design career accessible. That's my big thing right now. Because one of the things that's outstanding in my mind is as I'm working with some of these state and federal programs, okay, if the minute you begin to make over $720 a month for 9 months in a 5-year period, your services can deplete. So for me, it's important if I'm going to step into a career in web design, I have to have a solid foundation. And so I've been really perplexed why we don't have an affordable, solid web design education online. I can't go to a local junior college. I can't go to a state college. I can't go to New York and go to these top, you know, design schools. I can't do that because of my limitations. So I'm thinking, why is it that we don't have an affordable web design strong education online? Like
so Zelda University. Westciv.com. www.westciv.com. They have online great self-paced training. If you go to westciv.com and look at the courses, they're not much money at all. Jason Santa Maria, who's a designer, once told me he read my book and my book convinced him to learn web standards. And then he went to westciv.com to learn how to do web standards. So they teach HTML, XHTML, CSS, that stuff. Are you able to read books?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I want to shout out to one of your sponsors, audible.com. Thank you so much, Audible. You've brought a lot of reading to my life. So when I can't sit and read the text for too long, I can actually listen to audible.com.
So I wish all of our guests could make that kind of segue for us.
I wish they would pick up a book apart. We publish these wonderful books for web designers, but unfortunately, they're not read aloud books. Maybe the sponsor will become interested in doing that.
Well, they should. Well, anyway, they are a sponsor of this show, so we should say thanks to them. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/bigwebshow. You can get a free audiobook. You can get a free 14-day trial, so you can consume a tremendous amount of audiobooks during that time period. And
do you know what I'm listening to now, Dan?
What is that?
I'm listening to The Wizard of Oz on audible.com.
You mentioned that.
And so I'm reading my daughter all the Oz books, because one really nice thing about iPads and all that technology is you can get books for like $1.99.
Right.
Someone took all these books that, you know, Frank Baum wrote in 1910. So they're all in the public domain now. And it's like Project Gutenberg, like that kind of thing. So you download all these books. It's about 5K. It's every book he ever wrote about Oz. And I'm just going through them, reading my daughter three chapters a night.
That's awesome.
In bed. And, you know, it's got all this archaic language, right? Because he, you know, it was the way people wrote then. So she's hearing that and following the story and picturing it. And it's really wonderful. And then, you know, after I do that for her, it's nice for me to have audible.com read the book to me. It's kind of sweet.
That's very cool.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I was recommending this Icon Steve Jobs book, but I thought of something else that I threw into my queue.
What's that?
You know, this Game of Thrones thing. You heard about this, right?
Oh, my. Yeah, I'm reading it now.
Okay, well, I just added this one. A Game of Thrones, it's the first book. It's actually called A Song of Ice and Fire. It's getting a lot of attention. They have a part one and a part two, and they also have and it's all unabridged. So I'm looking forward to starting on this. It's a tome, though. It's like 33 hours for the two parts together.
Sure.
But what a nice segue. All of our guests should make a segue like that.
So we
have a few questions from the chat room, too, by the way.
Sure.
Okay. I just wanted to make one more recommendation. Is that if you're able to read well-designed websites or, you know, basic...
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Okay, so I will plug alistapart.com.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is a very good resource. And Smashing Magazine, where you can just pick up a lot of information. Others in the chat room may have suggestions as well. We would welcome them.
Jeffrey, I have a quick question for you, though. When you mentioned the word self-taught, okay, I understand that there's a lot of web designers that are self-taught. But for me, in this particular situation, the reason it's become so alarming is I'm actually working right now with the Department of Rehab. Remember, I mentioned that before. And with the Department of Rehab, we're put on a timeline. So for example, they gave me the computer, the software, the books, but under the requirement that I would attend some type of schooling. So I have to research and find schools online, because that's the only way for me to be able to keep the current items that I have right now, like my computer. So that's why I was looking for online web design programs, because in order for me to keep the services that I'm using, I have to be involved in some type of education, because they want me to be able to have skills to be able to get a job. So even though a lot of the self-taught resources, of course, I'm looking at those and I'm doing that and adding that to any curriculum that I may take advantage of. But that's why I think it became such an ordeal to me, because I thought I have to be enrolled in some type of online school program.
I don't. I want to see Washington.edu.
Okay.
Has a web design program. I think if you Google web design curriculum online, you will find classes. I can't say which ones are good. Opera.
Okay.
The Opera Software Company. They make the Opera browser. They have a web standards curriculum.
Okay.
That's good. That's very good. I know some of the people that worked on that. The Web Standards Project, if you go to webstandards.org, they have an education program, which they don't, do you remember what they call that?
I don't.
You'd have to go there, but, and then there's W3 Schools. I'm not sure I can recommend.
Can you even recommend them anymore?
No, I can't really.
Sort of fallen out of favor.
Yeah. The problem with saying Google it is, you can't be sure that everything you find is going to be good. I would start with opera.com, because they're very good, and go to the Web Standards Project. And I think if you go to the Web Standards Project, they will probably link to other curricula from that may or may not be online. I have a friend, Leslie Jensen Inman, who teaches. A friend, Aaron Walter, who used to teach. There are some schools but I don't know if they're doing anything online. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, what I did was I picked up Interact with Web Standards. I just picked this up. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the classes. I have to take some form of class online just to show the department that I'm actually involved in a class. And then what I'm going to do is just follow my own curriculum on the side and just hope to, you know, that's the way that I can kind of teach myself appropriate or I guess proper semantic web standards. So that's what I'm doing right now. So
yeah, those are good people that put that book together.
Okay.
Got a couple questions from the chat room. Can we hit some of those?
Sure.
So let's go back a little bit. Marty.
Hi, Marty.
Marty asks, what makes your life easier visiting websites? Is a linear website better? What about multiple columns, reading columns? Because people, that's a great question. People are always doing these multi-column sites. Is that easier or worse for you?
For me, it's not troublesome, the site itself. It's more of the movement within the site. So as long as you're not putting anything that's jumping all around. I went to a site the other day and I thought, what is this? You know, it was just moving all around and they had all this video and it was going all over the place. And I thought, wow, okay, I got to leave. So it's not really the layout per se. It's more of all the movement that some of the sites.
Right, because when people think of some kind of visual impairment, they automatically think, oh, the person who isn't going to be able to read the text. That's the main thing. They don't think about things like movement. They don't think about flow of a page.
The text is usually fine. I mean, a lot of designers out there have really worked to, you know, use proper type and proper type or font sizes. But it seems more of, I think some designers out there are still, they think making a website look pretty is making things move around all the time. And I'm not against that because majority of people probably can handle that. But for someone like me, that's just, it's not an enjoyable experience.
Hmm. Jay Thrash asks if there are tools that web designers can use to simulate the effects of your disorder, like the tools they use to simulate colorblindness, something to help designers understand effects and layouts or things to stay away from. Before you answer that, how common is your disorder or disorders that have a similar effect on people using the web?
The disorder itself, most likely, as even Jeffrey said, he's experienced dizziness. Pretty much everyone will experience dizziness in their lifetime. I don't think it's unavoidable. But I would say about 5 million people a year, I think that's the number, go into for chronic or some type of vertigo or a disequilibrium problem. Right. They see the doctor. So for me and my condition, I think it's I guess less popular. I don't know what's the word to use for it. Cause I think it's like 1% of the population has a chronic, of the US population.
But there are a lot of, to put it another way, there's a lot of dizzy people out there. Potentially.
There's a lot of dizzy people out there. Let's just call it
1%
it
is huge. 1% is huge.
Yeah. 1% is huge. And,
so tools how do you simulate this?
How do I simulate this?
Yeah.
Well, I try to simulate it visually by using the snow globe, but I don't know if there's a way for me. I will continue to look out there. Maybe I can link something up on how to simulate it. Goodness. It's almost be like I'm trying to think of a way to simulate it for it more visually. Yikes. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one to put because, you know, just I know all of you, some of you at some time have maybe felt a moment of dizziness or moment of disequilibrium or just imagine that and it's just not stopping.
See, there's one more.
Imagination is and empathy are the ways to,
are
the only ways to do it. But I think you've done a good job of giving us the feeling what that's like.
Yeah, I hope so.
And God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless you guys. I love this show. It's a way for me to connect. And I just really appreciate what you guys are doing and for having me on. It's pretty amazing just to think I'm just a disabled girl with a blog and you guys asked me to come on. So I think that's pretty spectacular.
You're actually very cool. And
thanks.
It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much to our guest. You can find out more about Marissa on her website, ablediz.com. I'd like to say thanks to our sponsors, audiblepodcast.com/bigwebshow and Field Notes brand. And thanks everybody for tuning in. You can go to 5x5.tv to hear previous episodes of this show and all the other shows that we do. You can, of course, follow Jeffrey on Twitter, @Zeldman. I'm @Dan Benjamin on Twitter. And we appreciate it. We will be back soon. Thanks everybody for tuning in.